Blog Talk Radio.
Say shit. The off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast, on a Tuesday evening, April 22nd, 2014. I'm Dre, he's Jay. I'm used to saying Tuesday night because it's usually nighttime, but this is our first show in which the sun's actually out, so this will definitely be a change. And Jason, we are joined today by Fantasy Sports Royalty.
Yes, we are. We were definitely called out by the esteemed commissioner on our last show for talking way too much wrestling and not talking enough fantasy baseball, as we promised. So to make up for it, we decided if someone's actually going to take the time to comment on our show, we might as well get them on the air.
But actually, I'd be glad to talk about wrestling, you guys, so.
I am all wrestled out. I have talked enough wrestling to last a lifetime in the last two shows. So,
ladies and gentlemen, the esteemed,
nearer and dearer to my
esteemed
heart,
commissioner of our fantasy baseball league, David Lewis. David, welcome in.
Thank you, gentlemen. A pleasure to be with you.
Ad hack fantasy baseball league, right off the bat, what in the world does that stand for? What's the origins of that, and how did the whole league come together way back in the early 80s?
Yeah, it was 1984. I had just started working at a new ad agency, and there was a book review in the Chicago Tribune that morning about this new paperback that had come out called Fantasy Baseball, and called Rotisserie League Baseball. I read the review. I ran to the bookstore at lunch, bought the book, kind of sat in my office very quickly and read it, and said to my boss, listen, I got nothing to do right now. I think I'll form one of these leagues. And we did. And ad hack is sort of a play on two terms, ad hoc, which, you know, means kind of put together. But ad hack is also a term for used for ad people, advertising folks, the hacks, the people who aren't that good. So it was sort of started that way, just because almost all of us in the league at the very beginning were advertising people. So it became the Ad Hacks, Ad Hack Baseball League. And we started in 1984, traditional rotisserie league rules. We started with the people who created the game, and we've been playing ever since.
Yeah, I'm definitely familiar with the term hack. I've been called that many times before.
Well, we've been what is it, Dre? I miscalculated on the last show and said this was my 14th year. And I went out of my way and looked it back up, and it's actually my 13th. So I don't want to make myself sound like too much of a veteran. I haven't even been in the league half as long as it's been in existence, but long enough to have seen a lot of fun stuff and things come and go. And
it's been an interesting run. This was our 31st. Season. We're beginning our 31st season. The game has not changed that much in the rules and things, the way we play, but everything else about the game has changed. The people who play it, just the fact that there's, you know, cable TV and computers. Cable TV was very rare in 1984, and computers, well, nobody really had personal computers back then. So it was a very different game and played a very different way. It's obviously gotten a lot easier and a lot more popular over all these years. So we've kind of grown along with it in many ways. When we started, the people that we dealt with were the people in New York who invented the game. There was a bunch of magazine writers and editors who invented the game for themselves and fine-tuned it enough to write the book. And that's who we dealt with at the very beginning. Those are the people who I would call on the phone to ask questions about how to do certain things. They ran our stats for us. And so we sort of learned at the feet of the masters, the people who invented the game. And, again, we've been playing it ever since.
We got people emailing in. The 12 teams in the league now email each other to set up trades, to discuss trades, phone calls and whatnot, and then email the trades back to you and whatnot. So back in the day before the computers and the smartphones and all that, how did all of that work out? What was the process that you had to go through to get transactions done?
Well, it was a lot of phone calls, a lot of let's get together at lunch meetings. Since most of us were working at ad agencies here in Chicago, we were all in the same area. We'd meet for lunch and literally just make massive trades at lunchtime. It was also a ton of phone calls, all hours of the day and night. It was quite different than it is now. People were more involved because we were talking constantly. It wasn't as simple as it is now. A lot of the spouses had to grow accustomed to the 11 o'clock at night phone calls trying to trade for an outfielder. And even worse was all the stats. The stats were I had to fax everything in to New York, and I would get the stats back one night a week about 3 o'clock in the morning via fax. And then I would have to distribute them via fax to everybody else. It was, it would have been easier with carrier pigeons, but they weren't available at the time.
Well, I have to definitely say thank God for the miracle of modern technology. Just thinking back through all the moves that I've had being in this league and all the fun that I've had, but, 2002, my first year, was the only year I lived in Chicago in this entire run, and I was just going back and thinking through, as we're talking about all these things that went on, I think back to that first year that Andre and I won the league. I lived in Montana.
Right.
And and I still made my appearances, the mandatory appearances, but that's a sign of dedication, how much fun this really is to do with all you people.
Well, at the very beginning, because there were no computers or things, we had a rule that if you were leaving Chicago, you either had to get partners who were here or you kind of had to drop out because not everybody had access to, free long distance from their work or whatever. So when I, for example, moved to Los Angeles at one period, I took partners so that I could remain in the league. But what you're talking about is true. It's like we don't care where you live now. As long as you can show up for the draft and take part, It's become a whole lot easier, needless to say.
Let's talk a little bit about the draft, because I think for a lot of people out there who do fantasy sports, they're used to just, especially football, because football's got to be the predominant fantasy sport, where everybody just sits around a table and every name of every player is on the board, and everybody just goes around and takes a turn and picks a player. What we do with the auction style, and I know it came right out of that original book, is so ingenious. I mean, it turns everybody at that table into a poker player with money. I mean, you've got money to spend, and you have to spend it wisely. And it's so nuanced and tense, and it's 6 hours of just absolute incredible fun. I'm sure you have some memories of some great auctions. They all are great, and they're all different.
The very first year we did it, Jason, 1984, we were at the executive conference room at the Leo Burnett Agency here in Chicago, and sitting around, a zillion-dollar marble table in one of the biggest conference rooms of one of the largest ad agencies in the world, and it's a bunch of us sitting around there at night. For the first time, we're just figuring out how to do all this. And about 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes into the auction, Tim O'Day, who is still in the league, one of the original people in the league, turns to me and with just wide-eyed, childlike exuberance said, "This is the greatest night in sports." And that's what we've called it ever since, because it is truly, as you know, that much fun. And, we call it a draft, but as you said, Jason, it really isn't. It's an auction. I don't play fantasy football. Fantasy baseball is enough for me. But as you said, there is no greater day than sports for us than that auction, because it is truly a poker game. You have money involved, so you have to really know what it is you're doing, and it is a poker game. Do you bid up a player knowing that you don't want him but making other people spend more money because they only have $260 limit? Do you hold off and not bid on certain players that you might want, waiting for somebody else to come up? Are you, you know, it is a poker game. And what happens as you play longer and longer, just like in poker, there are tells. We know, for example, who the Cleveland Indian fans are. And myself and another guy are Detroit Tiger fans. So I know that people are going to bid up Tiger players when I bid on them because they think I want them because I know them so well. There are players such as yourself who spend a lot of time looking at the rookies and the minor leaguers, and you have that kind of inclination to bid on those guys. So we do bid up certain players. We bid up White Sox players because a couple teams will just, that's what they want. That's what they know. So it's one of the great parts of the game is that poker style of bidding. It's what makes an auction fun. It's what makes every single player that's nominated exciting, because you don't know what's going to happen. And just like in regular auctions, sometimes you get stuck. You know, you get stuck with that guy you didn't want only because somebody didn't bid an extra dollar. You know, you thought you were just bidding him up, but nobody says 15, and you get stuck with Ed Woodson of the New York Yankees, and it's the worst thing you've ever done, and you never, ever forget it.
You know, it's funny because I remember back my first year I played alone, and I had just a whole desk full of books and information, and it was definitely the paralysis by analysis. So my second year, I decided to bring on my partner here, Andre, to help me out, and it was funny explaining
biggest mistake
everything
you ever made.
Well, it's funny explaining everything to him, and just saying that, you know, because we played fantasy sports online for years, all through the '90s, Sandbox and Yahoo and whatever we could find, football, basketball, you name it, and I'm trying to explain to him the way this league worked. And the way you had to watch values of players and just, you know, and he sat through that with me that first time and you really realize that it's almost like what you said with Tim O'Day. It's like you have this sort of epiphany that you're, wow, this is different. This is cool. I'm really onto something here. And it feels like when you play this way, like, you know, the secret that nobody else knows,
mm-hmm.
because this is exciting and it's addicting too.
And it's changed over the years. I mean, the whole cottage industry has grown because of around fantasy sports. When we first started, there was nothing. And what I would do the very first season, what I did to scout players to do my research, was I got the Sporting News Baseball Register and the Street and Smith annual baseball magazine that just talked about rosters. There was no discussion in any of these books about how to play fantasy baseball. It didn't exist. You know, you had to figure it out yourself, but you did it by looking at statistics and trying to figure things out. And one of the interesting things that's happened over these 31 years is that when the guys who invented Rotisserie League Baseball created the game, the idea was that it would mimic Major League Baseball, that you could act as the owner and general manager of a team and mimic Major League Baseball. But what has happened over the years is a little bit of reverse, and this is where Moneyball comes in. Major League Baseball now kind of imitates fantasy baseball, if you think about it. We don't have scouts to go down to scout minor league ball players and go down to spring training and look at ball players and rate them. All we have are statistics. So all of our thinking, all of our scouting, all of our research was done looking at statistics only and analyzing stats. And that's what Moneyball is. It's looking at statistics and analyzing stats. And Major League Baseball now, in its own little way, mimics our game almost as much as it is the other way around. They're using more and more statistical-based scouting and information to create their teams. And you know, when we play our game, we don't care about fielding. We don't care about those statistics that don't count. We don't care about a lot of that stuff. You know, to the same extent, none of us are going out to spring training and looking at a ball player and judging him by how he looks in his uniform and how fast he is running the bases. We're looking at what's his stolen base potential. Does he hit for power? You know, is he going to play every day? Things like that. So where it's a game that was designed to mimic Major League Baseball, it now sort of mirrors it a little bit, or vice versa.
Yeah, Jason explained how the league worked to me, trying to catch me up to speed, and then the funny story about when I first met all you guys is when I go down to the Billy Goat Tavern in downtown Chicago to meet the whole team in February for sort of a pre-draft meeting.
It's our winter
meeting.
Yeah. The annual
winter
meeting.
I have no idea who you people are. So Jason, you know, trying to be helpful, says, well, you know, it's going to be like a group, 8 or 9 or 10 basically white guys, maybe one black guy in there. You'll see them. Just a big group of white guys. So I walk into downtown Billy Goat Tavern in Chicago looking for a group of white guys. And this is not exactly rare in Billy Goat Tavern. So I honestly went around to a bunch of groups of white guys going, hot plate league, because the information Jason gave me about the league had a different name back then, hot plate league. So I'm literally walking around to these groups of random strangers going, hot plate league, and they're looking at me like I have the third eye. And I finally find you guys in the back there, and I notice you by the telltale signs that you're all holding different fantasy baseball magazines and pouring over them. And I go, oh, these are my people. And I finally found you guys.
You have found the geeks.
But, yeah. But there's another part of the draft that is even more complicated. If the auction isn't hard enough for you, after that's over, there's the ultra draft, in which you do go around the room and take turns and just select players. And these are minor leaguers and guys who are not signed to American League contracts. That could be anybody. That could be a college player. That could be a high school player. That could be your nephew. That could be anybody. And believe me, that's just as complicated as it gets, because the vast majority of those guys, most baseball fans and even most fantasy sports fans, have never heard of any of them.
That's something that we've only been doing for I don't think we did it for the first few years because it didn't exist. The guys who wrote the book wrote a revised edition a couple years later, and some of the rules changed, and they created what they called the ultra draft, as you're talking about, which was a way to pick your reserves and include some minor leaguers and things. And we refined it to make it work for us. But it is a true draft, and Andre, as you're saying, people over the years have taken you can take any minor leaguer who's attached to an American League team. You could take any American League player who was not bought at the auction. But you could also take Japanese players, college players, retired players, players who were on suspension, who are not attached to a National League team. You've got to do a little work. And I know you and Jason, among maybe two other teams, really, really excel at your minor league draft when it comes to these points. I mean, I think yourself, the Bill Moy and the Holy Cows, and the Ben Siegel of the Strange Gloves really, really do some excellent minor league scouting and come up with some great names in that ultra draft that you get to show off for a few years. The great young players who come into the league who you get to hold on to for quite some time. And it's one of those things that deserves a lot of attention but doesn't always get as much scouting time as the auction does.
Yeah, I've had a lot of fun with that part of it, especially, you know, coming in new, knowing, you know, and Bill Moy, who's the Holy Cows of his team, recruited me into the league.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I basically told me, you know, you're not going to win right away. You're gonna pay into this, and it's gonna take a while. And I'm like, okay. So I tried to develop a a 3-year plan, and it turned into a 5-year plan. But it, you know, it eventually paid off. You do realize it's easy to lose, for sure. It's very easy to just pick a rotten team and draft an auction or buy the wrong guys and then dump them all and start all over again the next year. But it's a truly amazing thing when everything you see, all the things that have to go right in order to win. Nothing comes easy. It's very hard to just coast with a good team because you've got 11 other teams behind you all wheeling and dealing and trying to solidify their position. And everybody's, you know, going after a cut of the piece of the same pie. And it's not until you really win all the way through and that you really appreciate, you know, everything that happened to make that work and how hard it is to do year after year. And I think that's why we really don't see a lot of repeats.
No, it doesn't happen often that the teams win 2 years in a row. But, you know, what you're saying is so true, and you can really, as silly as it might sound, you really respect what a major league general manager or owner or whatever has to go through. I mean, it's just fantasy to us. You know, this is real life to them. When one of their pitchers goes down, that's a multi-million dollar investment, you know, for a team that's in it to win very, very big. Ours is just a game. Yes, there's some money involved, but, you know, we have our injuries and everything else, but our life goes on. It's not like we've got the same pressures, you know. But that's part of the fun of the game for us, too, is that players get hurt. Well, did you do a good job in your ultra draft and get some good reserves, or have you been scouting the free agent list to see who's available? What kind of trades can you make with other teams? The season, it's a very, very long season, and things change dramatically from week to week. One player gets hurt, one player gets traded into the league. Some big hotshot gets traded from the National League into the American League, and a team picks him up, and it could change the rest of their season. So it's one of those games that you are involved from the very from day one all the way to the World Series or the playoffs to the last day of the year.
So 1984, 30 years of Ad Heck. Of those 12 teams in it right now, how many of those are still originals from 84?
We have three. There's three of us who are still in it from the very beginning. I started it obviously, and I've been in it since 84. I did take a couple years off. I used to say I went to the Betty Ford Rotisserie Clinic for a couple years. But myself, Rick Korzenowski of the Slavic Slugs is one of the originals, and Tim O'Day, who I mentioned before from the Keller Helens, were all three of the original teams that have been in it the entire time. A couple other teams joined the second season. Bill Moy, as we talked about, the Holy Cows, I think they've been in it since year two. And again, the league has changed. Again, when we first started, the majority of us were ad guys. One guy who was in the league is now, or two guys who were in the league at one point, are Major League Baseball agents, and which
wow.
is kind of interesting. They, you know, one was not an agent at the time; he was just finishing school, and he's become a big deal agent. And the other one who joined the league was an agent, and that was part of the joke, is he'd always pick his own players. So, you know, we could always bid those guys up. One guy who was in the league at the very beginning left the league at one point and ended up buying his own minor league baseball team. So he got to play it for real for a period of time.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have come and gone from the league, but nobody kind of ever forgets it. It's been a lot of fun for a long time.
Well, I know Andre had this point to bring up too, but I'll jump in here. I know there had been a few years ago, our league was featured in a book written about fantasy baseball.
Right. We've gotten some publicity over the years. When the guys wrote the original book, they did like a follow-up every year for the next couple of years, and we won some awards for having some of the best team names at the time. So we were featured in that. And then a number of years ago, a man who was the sports writer, if there actually was one, a sports writer for the Wall Street Journal, covered the sports, the business of sport, decided that fantasy sports had become such a big thing, fantasy baseball, that he was going to literally take a year off with permission from his bosses to write a book. He was going to learn the game and play the game and write a book about his experiences. It's called Fantasyland. And we are included in a chapter about some stories of things that had happened in the league. And then they went and made a documentary based on the book. And they came to the Billy Goat Tavern, where we have our winter meeting, as we call it, and interviewed myself and Tim O'Day and Rick Korzenowski about some of the stories that that have happened throughout the years in our league, where we've had, you know, trades made at weddings where Tim O'Day was getting married, and we were all at the, not all of us, but many of us from the league were at the wedding reception. And he and his new bride are sitting, of course, at the head table, and across the dance floor, I look at them, and Tim kind of motions me over to the table, and I walk over, and he kind of leans over, and he whispers to me, "Do you think Bud Uhaly will trade me Tony Armas for Luis Leal?" I said, "Well, I don't know. I should call him and ask." And I literally went into the cloakroom at the reception hall and called Bud and said, "I said, I thought you were at Tim's wedding." I said, "I am. He wants to know if you'll make this deal." And he said, "Yes, I will make the deal and tell him it's his wedding present." And I walked back in the room, and, you know, Tim's looking at me, and I give him the thumbs up, and he was all excited. And I think Beth, his wife, hit him for the very first time. But we've had trades made at weddings like that. There are a number of stories about the – one great story was Mark Stevens, who was Bill Moy's partner for a while with the Holy Cows. He and a number of players would literally sit in their cars late at night so that they could listen to the West Coast games on the radio, because there was no Major League Baseball network, and ESPN wasn't, you know, as big as it is now. So Mark, I think, told the story about going down to his car very, very late at night so we could listen to the West Coast broadcast of an Angels game, whatever it was. And he gets into bed. It's probably 1:30 in the morning. And his wife rolls over and said, "How did Carew do?" Because Rod Carew was one of his players, and she needed to know. So hopefully Carew had a good night, and so did he. But we used to do big banquets, too, and have a huge banquet at the end of the year to pass out all the awards. And spouses or significant others would come to these events. And it was always quite a show, and we had a great time. One year at the banquet, I was working in Los Angeles, and I could not come in. So I kind of pre-recorded the entire banquet, and I used some famous commercial voiceover people to help me with to pre-record the entire show. It was all done on tape, and it seemed to work out pretty perfectly. So we've had a lot of fun over the years, needless to say.
Was there a documentary done as well, or did I imagine that?
There was a documentary done based on Fantasyland, and that's where they came out and interviewed us, right. When the writer of Fantasyland, Sam, whose last name I can't think of right now, when he came to town to do an autograph, a book reading and a book signing at Barnes & Noble here in Chicago, I show up, and I introduced myself, and we had talked any number of times. Like I said, we were included in the book. And while he was – and the place was packed. There were about 50, 60 people there. And he introduces me as one of the people mentioned in the book and a couple other people who were mentioned in the book. And we were all asked to sign the book from all these people. So out there somewhere are autographed copies of this book that are probably lost value because they asked me to sign them.
Well, our live portion is about to end. If you could hang on for our after show for another 15 minutes, we'd love to get some more stories out of you, David.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
All right. Fantasy royalty, David Lewis, the commissioner of our baseball league, has been our guest. We will end our live show now. Subscribe on iTunes to listen to the rest of the show. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. We'll see you on the other side of the music. All right, now into our after-show portion of our program with David Lewis, the commissioner of the Ad Hack Fantasy Baseball League. Dave, when you look at fantasy sports today and how big it's exploded from back when you guys started this back in 84, what goes through your mind? How big this industry is? How much bigger can it get? Wow, it's just unbelievable. Fantasy sports is everywhere.
It's amazing, and there are fantasy golf leagues, there are fantasy basketball, football, just everything at this point. And, you know, what's really amazing about it is it's kind of a sad thing in a way. The guys who created fantasy sports, these guys in New York who have all had incredible careers as magazine publishers, writers, and editors, who created this game, made no money on it. They wrote the book and explained how to play it, but nothing was really ever belonged to them. They owned nothing. They didn't own the rights to the name Fantasy, for example. They had Rotisserie, but not Fantasy. And all these games and other things that grew because of their great idea, they ended up with nothing to show for it financially or anything else. You know, in this day and age, it's a little bit sad, but it is just the way it works. And I think they all take great pride, though, in the fact that they created an entire industry. I think if it wasn't for fantasy baseball, a lot of I don't think Major League Baseball Network would really necessarily have, maybe it would have been created, but maybe not in the fashion that it is, where a lot of their program is devoted to fantasy. ESPN spends a lot of time dealing with fantasy. There are, like we talked about before, books, magazines, radio, TV shows, everything. It's become huge. And the NFL, I think, you know, is a classic example of how they've benefited from fantasy football.
Absolutely.
You know, it's really something. And then when you see Moneyball, the movie and the book and everything else, based on literally Bill James, the guy who invented the sabermetrics, which is basically analyzing baseball stats. You know, I first off, the other thing is, guys, we all know, any of us in the Ad Hack Baseball League, if you gave us a job as a Major League General Manager, we would do a damn good job. Because we think we know everything.
Yes.
Of course.
I'm waiting for the first one of us to really get a job as with a Major League Baseball team.
Well, I'll tell you, if it wasn't for this league and fantasy baseball the way we've been playing it, I wouldn't know anything, and Andre can attest to this, I wouldn't know anything about American League baseball. Growing up in the National League as a Cubs fan and knowing everything about all the National League teams and all the players growing up, to now be able to flip that and tell you I don't know anything other than the Cubs, I don't know anything about National League baseball, but I know a whole hell of a lot about the American League in a completely unintentional way.
Well, it's exactly the reason why we play American League, is that I'm from Detroit originally and an American League fan. I moved to Chicago, became a White Sox, you know, followed the White Sox and the Tigers, and I enjoy the Cubs too, but I always knew the American League. So at the time when Rotisserie was created, they suggested you pick one league or the other, again, because of keeping stats. And we picked, I said, well, it's my league. We're going to play American League. But to the same extent what you're talking about was that very first season, a lot of us, it was a lot more social then, and a lot of us would get together and go to a ball game. And we'd go sit at the old Comiskey Park and sit there and analyze the players out loud and talk about them. And people around us used to ask if we were scouts, because we seemed to know so much more about so much minutia about every player on the Twins, let alone the White Sox, you know, or the Cleveland Indians, whoever they were playing. And when they would ask us if we were scouts, we'd say, well, in a matter of speaking, we are. You know, we are scouts for our own baseball teams. But it gives you a different point of view on sports, and hopefully one that makes it even more enjoyable.
That's funny. I get asked if I'm a scout all the time, and I'm out here at the Memphis Redbirds AAA games doing my side job keeping score for Baseball Info Solutions. When I'm talking about the players to whoever my scoring partner is that night, I'm sort of taking a fantasy bent when I'm talking about, you know, oh, look at this guy. Look at the hole in his swing. I bet when he gets up to the majors, he's not going to hit more than 250. And so I get that all the time as well. Are you a scout? I swear, the game I went to Saturday night, three different people asked if I was a scout. So I get the same thing, and it's pretty neat.
You are a scout for the Chicagoland Pirates.
Yes.
I think
exactly
you should get
right.
business cards made.
Oh, and by the way, boss, I want a raise.
Good luck.
Well, we'll have to put, send that to HR.
Upstairs. You've won a couple times, three times, right?
Yes.
I've
won twice and finished second once.
Well, that's not bad.
It wasn't easy.
That's all since 2006 because those first four years were a wash. Those were the dark ages of keeping overpriced players and making stupid trades, but basically just being a new team.
That's part of it. We sort of guarantee you won't win your first year, but the second year you should do pretty well, and that's a couple teams have done very well their second season. So, like anything else, the more you do it, the better you get at it, hopefully. And if you, like anything else, you learn your lessons, you do your homework, hopefully you will always improve.
Yeah,
the thing about it is you would...
If there's one rule to go by, it's
inspire me.
We're talking over each other.
That's all right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you would think it would inspire me to take a team. There's been many times when there's an opening in our league. We try to keep it at 12 teams, but sometimes a couple of teams have to drop out. And I've, you know, Commissioner, you've always been nice enough to offer me a spot, and I've always been kind in telling you hell no because I see how much work goes into it. And there's no way I don't think I could keep up at all, even in the first 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
But the reality is, at the very beginning, it was an incredible amount of work because you had to read box scores. You know, you had to see the paper every day because you didn't have all this stuff right in front of you. So literally, your homework starts pretty much in February, like when we have our little winter meeting. Between that and the draft, when you get the magazines and you start going online to the websites to see who's doing what as you basically make your master plan for the draft, you know. And then once the draft happens, it's just a matter of keeping track of who these players are that are coming and going. It becomes much easier the day after the draft, you know. But that first month, that the month prior to the draft is pretty intense.
Yeah, Andre knows my ritual. I detox completely from the league as soon as the season is over. I enjoy the football season. And basically as soon as Super Bowl Sunday is over with, I always make the joke to him. It's like, oh, time to get to my second job. You know, time to start working on baseball stuff. And you could try to skate by and not pay any attention, but it doesn't do a service to yourself or even the other people who are in the league with you because nobody wants that fantasy dead team like you see all the time online where there's just that team that doesn't pay attention, doesn't make the moves. And definitely in the league that we're in, we've been, and as long as I've been in it, everybody is playing to win. Even if you're not going to win, everyone's playing to win.
And if they don't have that intensity or the desire to really win, they don't last long. They're not going to stay in the league because, you know, it's not going to be fun for them. And we don't want them. You know, you kind of don't want them in the league if they're not going to participate. They're not going to offer trades. They're not making their moves in time and all that. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen often. So, you know, you get a nice group. I think the 12 teams that are in the league now are, you know, everybody's experienced now, and it makes it exciting. If everybody knows what they're doing, you know, we have one team that this is their second season. We have a team that rejoined us after a few years off who won it a couple times, and so they know what they're doing. They're just getting reacquainted. But for everybody else, you know, we've all been doing it for a while, and you walk in there and that to that draft, and it is like, in a way, Major League Baseball. Everybody's in first place that day. And you see what happens as the season goes. We haven't had any trades yet. It's a little early for that, but everybody is making their moves, replacing their injured players in a very timely manner, and seem to know what they're doing.
So now that it's now we've talked a lot about the past. Of course, we're going to talk about the past, but a little more recent past. Any thoughts about this year's auction, this year's Stars of David, or how everything has gone so far to this point for you? How you doing?
You know, I'm in third right now, which is nice because for me especially, I had an off season last year and I kind of knew it. Just too many personal issues were going on prior to the draft, and I really didn't do my homework. And I knew going into the season it was going to be a lost season, and it was. But this year, you know, I had the time, and I was very satisfied with the draft. And what's been interesting to me is that I loaded up on power, and none of my – I've got Chris Davis, who's got more stolen bases than he does home runs. And I've got – I have no power hitters. But, you know, I managed to be in third place because I'm, you know, kind of near the top in RBIs and things like that. So it's been a rather strange season. Like most of the teams in the league, injuries have been unbelievable. These top pitchers who have been hurt, who are out for the season and things like that. It's like, it's really amazing. People should just draft Tommy John because he seems to be on every team. But
yeah, Dr. Yeah. James Andrews, $25.
I'll tell you, he's the most valuable player in the major leagues right now. But I was very happy with my team. I went in. My strategy this year was to keep a lot of players, so I only needed eight in the auction, and I was very happy, literally, with everybody that I got. You know, so hopefully it'll be I've won six times. I'm happy to say, and I don't know how many times I finished in the money, but. You know, it'd be a nice bounce back from last year.
Yeah, Andre and I, now that it's all over with, Andre and I, we decided we were going to go in there and we were going to spend a whole crap ton of money on offense, and we did. And so far, yeah, 3 weeks in, it looks like it's paying off, but you never know. All it takes is a guy to go into a prolonged slump or a major injury. And the beauty of it is, second place, third place, any of those places on April the 22nd, doesn't mean a thing. We haven't even gotten into the fun part of our season, but it's always fun to look back and see, you know, what we thought or what we were strategizing. It's funny that the first player that comes off the board
changes everything, doesn't it?
That's right. 11 strategies change after the first player comes off the board.
And in the original Rotisserie League book, they even tell you that. That you doesn't matter what your strategy going in is going in. When that first player comes down, everything changes. You know, I went in there and I thought, you know, one of my favorite players is Miguel Cabrera. He's a Tiger, and of course he's the best. And I had him for a number of years at $43 and had to let him go for this year. And I went in there, and of course I wanted him back. Who doesn't? And I decided that my limit would be $46. And I thought I'd probably get him for that because we've very rarely had players over that. And I stopped. I bid 46 when it came to me. And then I stopped when somebody said 47, and he ended up going for 50. He's not had a $50. He's not off to a $50 start, of course. He'll come around.
Right.
But that changed everything. It's like, okay, well, now I got the $46 to spend elsewhere. Fortunately, I had my backup plans, you know, and I managed to get some good players at some decent prices, and I was very happy with some of the guys I picked up. So far, so good, and you guys are doing pretty well. You're in second place.
Yeah, we're hanging in there 3 weeks in.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just stop. Let's just start. Hey, you know what? Let's just stop the season. Just start cutting checks. Let's make a deal right now. Let's start cutting the check.
Yeah, well, that means the Twins would win 2 years in a row, and we can't have that.
No, we can't let that happen.
No.
Okay,
No. But we'll do this again sometime mid-season and see how we're doing then.
Kamish, just great time as always. There's so much we didn't even get a chance to get to. We'll have to do this again sometime. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, it's always my pleasure, boys. When you're ready to talk trades, I can use a power hitter.
I'm always around.
All right. You guys take care. Thanks again for inviting me.
Thank you.
All right. David Lewis, Commissioner of Ad Hack Baseball League Fantasy Royalty, here on In Much Less Detail, the broadcast, or the podcast. See, I almost got through without messing up.
That's okay.